The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay, so Happy New Year to everybody. This is the first happy hour of 2018. I think the first time today I had to like write 2018 out with my handwriting, like, oh yeah, okay, it's the new year. And I wanted to start by talking a little bit about, or something that I noticed at myself I was doing, and I thought, oh, isn't this interesting, how I was thinking, like, oh, okay, all the holidays, traveling for me is behind me, now I have to really buckle down and, you know, get serious with my life and get everything in order and become a perfect person. Then I realized, oh, yeah, this is what we do, right? In the first part of January, we often have this idea that we're going to, I don't know, implement new programs or develop ourselves in some particular way. So the Buddhist practice that we teach here at at IMC, Insight Meditation Center, is a developmental pathway. This idea that you start where you are. You don't have to be somewhere else. You don't already have to be perfect. Don't already have to have perfect behavior, perfect mindfulness, any of those things. But instead, it's this idea that it's a path. It's a journey. And you can always only start where you are. Even though we often have this idea we should be somewhere else, and so where you are is thinking that you should be somewhere else. And so part of this practice is to notice that. But also part of this practice of it being this idea that it's a development pathway, that it's a road, a journey. Also we have aspirations of where we're going. Why we're doing this. What's the purpose? What's the direction? And some of our aspirations can include being more kind to ourselves and to others, to have more ease, peace, freedom in our life. To support others having more peace, ease, and freedom. We may have the aspiration to become liberated, to become awakened, to become enlightened. And of course, right, I think all of us probably are familiar with this very famous quote by this amazing person, Mahatma Gandhi. Be the change that you wish to see in the world. So we may have aspirations of how the world can be changed or that we can support it to be changed. So then what do we do when we notice or we feel this gap between our aspiration and what we're experiencing or doing or noticing in the present moment? Often there's a gap. Like, what do we do then? Option A is to flog ourselves, berate ourselves, feel bad about ourselves, right? And certainly I feel this, our society supports that in some ways. Or makes, I don't know exactly where it comes from, but I feel like that's kind of like an accepted thing to do, is to feel angry or disappointed or have a story that you're failing or, you know, somehow add some, I don't even know what the word is exactly, but to add a second arrow, for those of you who know this simile, right? The first arrow is this experience of like, oh, feeling the gap is an unpleasant sensation. And then to add on top of that some story about what it means about us as a person, because this gap is there. But what if part of your aspiration was about being kind or some variation of that, or finding freedom, or some variation of that, then when you notice this gap, is the perfect time to act on your aspiration. Perfect time. Can you bring kindness to yourself? Can you find some, can you allow what's actually happening to be there? Can you find some peace and ease with feeling uncomfortable with noticing that you just yelled at that person that you love and you wish to, you know, have more kindness and you find yourself yelling? Remember, you remember that you yelled or something. So that's the, when you notice, it's the perfect time to like, oh, can I be kind to myself here? Can I allow this uncomfortable feeling to be here? Find some peace with it. Find some freedom with it. And in that way, that's being the change that you want to see in the world. Noticing like, oh, okay, here's my temper, my impatience, my making a story. When I notice that somebody's doing something that I don't like or doesn't match my preferences, then I just go right into story about what it means about either the other person or myself. Can we just bring kindness? Like, okay, this is my experience right now. And then in that way, it kind of takes the fuel out of that, kind of stops the story from continuing to spin, or maybe to spin not quite as fast. Like, okay, yes, okay, here I go. I know this is a habit of mine. It's what happens. Can I find some spaciousness around that? And around this, Larry Yang, who is a teacher at the East Bay Meditation Center, that's in, not surprisingly, in the East Bay, he has a book that just came out a few months ago. Let's see, the title is called Awakening Together, the Spiritual Practice of Inclusivity and Community. And he talks a little bit about this in this book. I haven't read the whole book. I've kind of flipped through and found some passages of it. But he has this aspiration, which I think is really great. He writes it as this: may I be as loving in the moment as possible. If I cannot be loving in the moment, may I be kind. If I cannot be kind, may I be non-judgmental. If I cannot be non-judgmental, may I not cause harm. And if I cannot not cause harm, may I cause the least amount of harm possible. So in this way, he's inclining his mind towards, right, non-harming, kindness, and some peace. And acknowledging that he can't always do it perfectly. But he's setting the intention, inclining his mind. And that's what loving kindness practice is about too. So much is about inclining the mind. So that we can be loving. So that we can be kind. So that we can't allow things to be as they are and have some spaciousness, peace, and freedom. That's so much what Buddhist practice in general is about. It's what mindfulness practice in general is about. And it's also what loving kindness practice, what we're going to do today, is about. Is inclining the mind in a particular way. And whether we're using loving kindness in a particular way or mindfulness, both of these practices point towards, and maybe Buddhist practice is a big, giant, vague topic also, incline the mind towards more kindness and loving, peace, ease, and freedom. So in that way, I kind of encourage you to, when you, if you find yourself like me, like, oh, it's the first part of January. Okay, I don't know. I just found myself setting up these goals of what I'm going to do with my eating and exercise and meditation. It's, and then when I notice myself doing that, like, okay, I'll just bring some kindness that I want to do this. Not getting angry with myself that I'm just falling into this trap all the time. So maybe I'll say one last thing here too, is that we don't learn from what we already know. We learn the most from our mistakes. So when you find yourself like, oh, here I am doing what I don't want to do, or somebody is pointing out to you something that you didn't know about, maybe you are causing some harm, that you didn't even know that you were causing some harm, or something like that. Maybe you can bring that into like, okay, this may be uncomfortable, maybe a little bit painful, but this is how we learn. And can we bring some spaciousness as best we can to that as well, to that experience of, oh, that was a mistake. Just like we're doing like, oh, here's the gap between my aspiration and what I'm actually experiencing. So for if any of you haven't been to this happy hour before, I'm going to do a guided meditation on loving kindness to incline the mind towards loving kindness. I'm going to do this with loving kindness towards a benefactor. Benefactor is somebody for whom it is easy to feel loving kindness. We usually define a benefactor as somebody who has helped you, who has supported you in your life, and for whom it's easy to feel care, warmth, respect, love for. So somebody for whom you have a simple relationship. Some people also use what we can call an easy being. Maybe it's not a benefactor, maybe it's a kitten or a puppy or a baby, or right, we're inclining the mind. So a way that for whom it's a way it's easy to feel loving kindness. And then I'll do some guided meditation where we're using the benefactor. And then we'll expand it to include ourselves. Often ourselves could use some loving kindness. And it is a practice. So this is something that we have to cultivate. Not everybody all the time, but most of us most of the time need to kind of practice this. So with a loving kindness practice, there's generally three elements. There's the felt sense or vision of to whom you're developing loving kindness, benefactor or the self. There's also like a bodily sense. There can be a sense of warmth or softness or in the heart or the heart center that may or may not arise. And then the third element are the phrases, which we can repeat silently in our mind. I'll start us off with them, and then there'll be some silence where you can do them on your own. And then at the end, there'll be some time for some Q&A. So if there's something that comes up that you have a question about or you're unsure about or something, we can talk about it at the end. Okay, so let's start by taking an alert, upright, and comfortable posture. And we'll start by taking three long, slow, deep breaths just to help us get centered and to finish arriving. Anytime we're going to settle down and do some meditation practice, it can be really helpful to support finding ease in the body. The body and the mind are so intricately and intimately connected. It can often really support finding spaciousness, ease, love in the mind if there's some spaciousness and ease in the body. So if you haven't done so already, you can bring the breathing back to normal. And then just check in if there's some tension, some tightness that can be readily let go of or softened or loosened or lessened. You can check in around the eyes, the jaw. It's a very common place to hold tension. Sometimes it's helpful to move the jaw a little bit. The neck is also a place you can hold some tension. And sometimes just bringing our awareness to that area can soften the tension. Not always, sometimes. Maybe we can check in with the shoulders, letting the shoulder blades slide down the back. We don't have to make a big project out of trying to make the tension go away. We're just seeing if there's some that can readily be softened or loosened. Check in with the back, the entire back. And the belly, in the front of our torso. So often we have a tightness in our belly. See if we can let that soften a little bit. And our hips. Allowing ourselves to sink in to where we're sitting. Allow gravity to do its work while also maintaining some uprightness in a relaxed way. We can check in with our legs. And our feet. Feeling them on the ground. In the support of the ground. And our arms and hands. It's very common to have some tension in our hands when we're meditating. And we'll start here a little bit with resting our awareness, bringing our attention, being mindful of the sensations of breathing. So that is the movement of the abdomen or the movement of the chest or the sensations of the air going in and out of the nose. Choose one of those three, whichever feels the easiest for you to pay attention to, whichever perhaps is the most obvious. And just feel the sensations of breathing. If you find your mind wandering, that's okay. That's what minds do. Just very gently bring it back to the sensations of breathing. Find yourself lost in thought, you can just begin again. Bring your awareness back to the sensations of breathing. Just return. We can do this an infinite number of times, just simply returning. So you can use this mindfulness of the sensations of breathing, awareness of the sensations of breathing, as a touchstone or a refuge or a place to come back to. If you ever feel lost, confused, overwhelmed by the loving kindness practice, this is always an option to come back to the sensations of breathing. And then you can return to loving kindness if you'd like, or you could just stay with the sensations of breathing. And so to start the loving kindness practice, bring to mind somebody for whom it's easy to feel love toward, somebody for whom you have an uncomplicated relationship, somebody it's easy to feel warmth, care, respect. And as I said earlier, it can be a person. Doesn't need to be somebody that you know personally. Perhaps they're an inspirational figure or a spiritual leader. It can also be an easy being, a kitten, puppy, baby, squirrel, chipmunks, whatever might make your heart feel tender. Then we can set the intention to send them warmth, care, love. And you can silently repeat in your mind these phrases. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. You're welcome to modify these phrases and change the wording to something that resonates with your heart or feels more meaningful for you. And of course, the phrases don't have to be in English. They can be in whichever language is the language of your heart. And you can check in and see if there is a warm-heartedness or a softening or maybe a sense of ease towards this person or lovable being. We're just creating the conditions for this to happen. It doesn't mean that it will happen. It's okay if you don't feel anything in particular. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. And Now I'll be silent for a little while. Now you can check in and see if there's a sense of warmth or kindness, love, softness. Sometimes there can be a felt sense in the body, in the, like a heart center. If so, feel that feeling. How does it feel? And let it get as big as it wants to. Maybe there's a spaciousness and ease with the mind also, just a quality of spaciousness, of not having softness, maybe, that's a word. If you can check in and see if there is that feeling of softness. And then so, what does that feel like? What is that really like, this, if there is a sense of ease, or however small. It doesn't have to be completely ease, but maybe just incremental compared to when you just arrived. We'll see if we can cultivate this feeling and build on this feeling, both the feeling in the body and the feeling in the mind. As we expand our loving kindness for ourselves, We can begin by bringing a felt sense of ourselves. You can do that either by visualizing yourself, either how you are today, maybe a younger version of yourself, maybe even as a child or toddler, baby, an infant. Or maybe it feels easier or more natural for you to just have a felt sense of how you are feeling in this moment, how your body feels, or just how you, quote-unquote, feel. And then building on the loving-kindness that we developed or cultivated with the benefactor, we extend this now to ourselves. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. I'll be silent here for a little bit. And then to end this meditation, bring your awareness to the sensations of your feet on the ground, feeling the chair or cushion against your body. And when you're ready, you can gently open your eyes. So this practice is about bringing kindness, bringing some spaciousness and ease to our experience. But it doesn't mean that we throw out the window all our discernment or all our wisdom about what's going to bring more ease and happiness and support for ourselves and others. We're not being kind to ourselves in order to so that we can continue to eat chocolate chip cookies forever and never feel bad about it, or I just made that up. But, you know, just this idea that we, it's to support our aspirations and to not beat ourselves up when we discover that we're not living our aspiration, which by definition we're not. Like aspirations or something, right? It's a little bit out there, not exactly how we are here. So how to work with that. So now I'd like to open it up to some questions or comments. You can talk about loving kindness practice for the benefactor or for yourself, or questions or comments about the phrases, or maybe even that little bit of mindfulness practice in the beginning, or anything else you'd like to bring up. And we'll use the microphone.
Yeah, when you started off, you mentioned about the arrow, getting hit by the arrow, and I always took that story to mean that it was maybe an insult or something that would be upsetting, but I think the arrow that you refer to is the reaction to an insult or something that we put ourselves down, and there's a feeling that comes from that. That's the first arrow. Then if you go into that feeling and start telling stories, that's the second. Okay, got it.
Yeah, right? And there's like so many arrows we can do, right?
Oh, you got it.
We have aversion to our aversion, then we have aversion to our aversion to our aversion, and whoosh, off we go, right? And then a whole story will always be this way, I've always been this way, and it's quite something. Mm-hmm. I can do this, so thank you, Joe. Anybody else? Yes, can we pass the microphone back onto the stage?
Thank you. I was curious, why did you choose the benefactor to be somebody that you have an uncomplicated relationship with?
Yeah, that's a good question. So why have an uncomplicated relationship? Because often what happens is if we spend a lot of time with a benefactor, we didn't spend too much time, but maybe I should even make that qualifier. Sometimes when you're doing with a benefactor, you're sending loving kindness to this person, and then what starts to arise, may you be happy. But there was that time that you didn't meet me for lunch, and then I ended up doing that, right? All the things that we start to kind of notice, the times when we start to feel irritated towards them or something like that. So it's, just a way to keep it as simple as possible, that we can just consistently have a sense of loving kindness or warmth towards them. And I have had a number of people comment like, oh, I started sending it to this other person, but then I just started getting angrier and angrier, and which can happen. So it's a natural part of this practice that we start to notice, like we're kind of like setting this aspiration for a loving kind, to have loving kindness towards this person. And then what starts to bubble up is, gets amplified, is maybe we don't always have that or consistently have that feeling. So, thank you. That was a good question. Often when people don't want to ask a question, they're looking down, they're making sure they're not making eye contact with me. Right? I do the same. But a number of you are looking up, so this is a good sign. Here we go.
So the first person that really came up for me is someone who is dead, and long, for, you know, more than 10 years, but someone who fit all those attributes very beautifully. And then I continued with that for a while, and then it seemed awkward because I don't know where they are, and then my mind went to, well, wherever they are. Anyway, so then I switched. But do you have any recommendation about that?
Yes, interesting question. So the classic Buddhist teachings that are in the text say not to choose somebody who is dead. And I never really understood why. And I've heard different teachers give different reasons. So I think it's a great thing to explore, but it may be this reason. That then you may get into, well, it doesn't really make sense. Why am I wishing somebody who's not here some happiness and health? That just doesn't really make sense. Or maybe there's this idea that grief could arise. That, oh, here's this beautiful person that I feel so much love towards who is no longer here. So my view of how I approach these things is I kind of view practice as a laboratory and do exactly like you did. You did it, and you noticed, oh, this, I'm getting a little bit distracted here with something else, and then to switch to something, to someone else. So, but the classic teachings are not to choose somebody who has died.
Thank you.
I have a question. By sending that loving kindness energy to the other person, have you heard about that actually the other person has an experience of whatever?
Yeah, right? This is a natural question. So, yes, I have heard people say that their relationship with that person got changed. But we don't know if it's because the person changed or the individual that's sending the loving kindness, something in them changed, and then their body language changed subtly or something like that. So I'm just saying, yes, I've heard this, and I'm not really ascribing any particular meaning to it or saying that it's, I don't know, that there's magic or something.
On that note, where I'm coming from is, I heard a speaker who is a surgeon who started thinking very positive thoughts towards his wife that was somewhere. So he came home. Her attitude was just has changed in a positive way. And then he gave it a... So the next day, he just had the opposite thoughts or energy sending towards her. And then the evening he came home and it was just totally different. So it was sending that energy of loving kindness and sending, you know, the opposite towards. That is where my question came from.
I see. Yeah, so one way to think about this, I don't know exactly what happened, obviously, I wasn't there, but this is one how I think about it, is our minds and our bodies are so closely intertwined, much more than we often realize. So if we're inclining our minds a particular way, it leaks out, whether we want it to or not. Right, it leaks out this, and I don't know how exactly, right? The way we stand, the way we talk, the expression on our faces, the speed in which we do things, I don't know, in some way. And we all, like, there's a lot of books out there, that I'm thinking one in particular, that talks about how so much we communicate is nonverbal. So it kind of makes sense. If we're leaking out loving kindness, people are going to pick that up and then respond. So that's one way to interpret it. And if we're leaking out hatred, right, that's, people respond to that too, right? Yes.
What the gentleman was talking about kind of reminds me of people who do energy work, like channeling. Have you heard that correlation? Anybody bring that up between meditation and channeling energy work?
I'm not sure what you mean by channeling energy work.
People who do this work can be done in person or remotely, where they are sending what they call sending you positive energy, and you know that person that who this is sent to can actually feel it, and that's what kind of reminded me of his question.
Yeah, yeah. So I have heard that people say this, but that's all I can say. But somebody has said that. Right? I don't have this my. I haven't asked all the people that I send loving kindness to, you know, whether they felt something at 12:05 on Tuesday. You know, I just haven't. Maybe that's all I can say. But I wonder if it, even if they don't feel the energy that we're sending them, the fact that we are inclining our mind that way and that we are filling our heart as best we can with loving kindness is a fantastic thing to be doing for the world. And maybe we interact with somebody who interacts with somebody who interacts with somebody who interacts with somebody who interacts with that person. I don't know. But so whether or not it has this particular outcome of changing the person to whom we're sending loving kindness or not, I still think it's a fantastic practice. And a worthwhile thing to do. We have one or two minutes left if somebody has another question or...
Is there a place in the like traditional Buddhist teaching where the metta practice is laid out in the in the traditional words, or is this kind of extrapolated from something?
Yeah, that's a great question. Right, so you know that I do a little bit of Buddhist scholarship, so I'll try to, instead of giving you a 1-hour lecture. this saying of the phrases is a later development. What's in the earliest strata, we can say, of the Buddhist teachings is to incline your heart and incline your mind the one direction, and then the second direction. I think the first is east. Some people say east, and then north, and then west, and then south, or something like this. Without these particular phrases, but it's more just to fill your heart and mind with that. And a lot of scholars think that this was actually a common practice in ancient India at the time, so they didn't need specific instructions. So it wasn't necessarily distinctly a Buddhist thing, but the Buddhists are the ones who, well, that we have access to today, and that really folded it into their spiritual practice in a robust way. Okay, so I'll stay here if anybody has a question, and if you'd like to come up and talk to me. And I'll say again, Happy New Year, and I'm happy to see all of you.